Welcome to the Gonzo Chronicles. I'm your host, Cyrus Alderwood, the official spokesman for Generation X. Stick around. It's going to get weird, as always. Do you ever have one of those days where you wake up, you are so tired that you just can't help but want to take a nap immediately? That's me today. Now, granted, any given day of the week, I could probably pull that stunt off. I can sleep like no one's business. I'm so good at it. You know, it's a part of me, right? It's like the Force for a Jedi. Sleeping for me is yeah, that's good stuff, man. That's my sweet spot. But today, I woke up before 8 o'clock on a Sunday. And by the way, today is December 12th, 2021. I fought sleep last night. Actually, I sat up late because there's been a Star Wars marathon on TNT. And I am a sucker for those marathons. Even though I've seen these movies countless times, own every damn one of them. If it's on TV, I'm going to sit there and watch it. It's a guilty pleasure thing. Do you have any of those guilty pleasure movies when they're on TV? No matter how many times you've seen them, you're going to stop and watch. Big Trouble in Little China. I'm like that every single time. A lot of times, The Shawshank Redemption. I don't know how many times I've seen that. Or one of my classic favorites, Stand By Me. If that sucker's on TV, I will sit and watch it. Even the edited version where they take all the good cussing out. I don't know. So anyway, it was a Star Wars marathon last night. I crawl into bed. I fall asleep in the recliner. I wake up about, 2 a.m., stiff as a board. I'm waddling back to the bedroom like a penguin. And, I'm trying to get the blood circulating. And, I crawl in bed, and of course, I turn the TV on and put it right back on TNT. And every little bit, I'm laying there like I'm quoting the lines in my head. It's a rough night. So I kind of half-ass slept. So I'm not surprised that I got up and then dozed off in the recliner, still watching Star Wars. It's still on the TV right now. Can't help myself. So I was having a conversation the other day with a friend of mine. And we were talking about Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street, Jason and Freddy. And it wasn't movie about or discussion about horror movies. It was just those characters because they tried everything in the world to kill them. Everything but one thing, to even hurt them. They've caught them on fire. They've blown them up. They ate their heart out, like Jason in that one movie, the coroner ate his heart. And then he became Jason. That's the craziest thing. And then, they've hit him with sledgehammers, machetes. They've hung him from a barn, stabbed him with pitchforks, drowned him in a lake, drowned and left him hanging on the bottom of the lake by a rock and a chain. You name it. They've done everything in the world to kill. But in Monster Squad, do you remember this movie? I love this little 80s movie, Monster Squad. The one thing they've never done is kick either one of them in the balls. Why not? That's classic self-defense 101. You can't defend yourself. Somebody's trying to kill you. Shot to the balls. It's a great equalizer. Now, the only reason I think of that is because of that movie Monster Squad. And when the Wolf Man was growling and howling, and the kid thought he was going to die, and he goes, "Kick him in the nards." He goes, "Wolf Man don't have nards. Kick him in the nards." And then he kicks Wolf Man right in the balls. And then he like drops to his knees howling, and he got back something. He goes, "Oh, whoa, Wolf Man's got nards." Guarantee you, so does Jason and Freddy. No one ever tried a ball shot on either one of them. I'm just saying, could have saved a life. Could have saved a life. Could have given us 10 more minutes of good cinema too. But no, creators don't think of that shit, do they? We demand more as moviegoers. I'm just telling you. Hey, so if we're getting here to toward the end of the year, and hopefully everybody is, I don't know, it's Sunday. I got a couple more weekends before Christmas, so maybe folks will be out shopping today. I hope so. Get together with family and friends, enjoy yourself, and find some good things for mom and the family this year, everyone. Don't forget. Hey, I was gonna pick up on the bit of a conversation I started last episode, and since then, I went on Twitter and made some more comments about these far left commies, and got retweeted. Kind of fun. I only save this kind of behavior for Twitter, by the way. So before I read another short story excerpt from one of my books, which I strongly encourage you to visit Amazon and buy, I just looked at my book sales. Disappointing. I have not sold a book all month. Not a Kindle version, not a paperback version. That is sad. I've fallen into obscurity. That's a I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Hey, that's life, right? However, I got a new book coming out here the first of the year. It'll be Grave Legends Book Two, called Freedom's Path. That has a bit of a controversial twist. It goes back to the days of slavery and escape into the North, about a legend of an old bridge that crosses the Black River through Missouri. Should be an interesting book for those of you who enjoy horror with actually a strong theme to it. There's a really, really good backstory to that. That not just the storyline of the book and the two characters, but a really good backstory to that particular book. I was actually kind of proud of myself for the creativity on my second book ever that I was writing. I wrote this book a number of years ago. I'm doing a rewrite, and it'll be out next month. So if you haven't read Grave Legends, The Night Walker, you can go pick that up on Kindle or on paperback right on Amazon.com. And if you feel nice enough and want to give to some charity without actually spending a dime of your own money, when you go to Amazon and you put that in your cart or whatever you're buying on Amazon, go up to your browser and type in smile.amazon.com. And that's what's called the Amazon Smile program. It's still your same Amazon account, still your cart. The only difference is it gives you a charity, an opportunity to pick a charity that you want a percentage of your purchase to be donated to. You never have to write a check. It all comes out of the Amazon Smile program. And I've done that. Actually, if you want to pick a local charity, I encourage you to do that. Lot of the bigger national charities and nonprofits, they get plenty of money. As a matter of fact, a couple of years ago before COVID hit, The Nature Conservancy, which I used to use on there, they got over $3 million in, I think it was 2017 or 16, just in one year from that Amazon Smile program, from people picking their charity for a percentage of their purchases to be donated to. So that was really awesome. So pick some local charities. Those folks need it really, find a local animal shelter. There's one here locally that I support called Foundation for Appalachian Advancement. And you can pick whatever local one you want, whatever you're comfortable with, and go from there. All right, so let me pick up where I was last podcast. I was talking about, if you get a chance to go back and listen, I was talking about the six phases to unfreedom. All right, this was an article that was written by her name is Stella Morabito. And this is like a really good history lesson, the Bolshevik Revolution. six, reveals six phases from freedom to communist misery. So I talked a little bit about some of the people behind that and what happened during the Bolshevik Revolution, kind of reminding people that, like, look at some of the occurrences today. Now, there's another part of this. I went into the Communist Manifesto and I pulled out actually five things that Marx, Karl Marx, wanted to abolish. So this is very central theme to those people who are communists, even in this country. Okay, so there's no such thing as communism light. But first thing, as far as these phases, the first part is like laying the groundwork. Communists actually, they are the most relentless SOBs out there. This is a generation or decades long process, and which point they try to close people's minds to reason, and so that they're more influenced by emotion and propaganda. We see that today. Our news media, which I think is very, very left-leaning, but I think they have tenets of communism that maybe don't understand it or don't know it. Because if you notice, every story is a crisis. Everything, we're always in crisis mode, and that is a good way to like gin up the population and get them agitated, right? But how do you, if you look at the writings of the process of communism, where you close people's minds and make them easily influenced by emotion and propaganda, that's done through like just growing your bureaucracy, okay, for policies that promote polarization in society. How many times do we have to hear hyphenated Americans, right? You know what I mean? There's Asian Americans, white Americans, African Americans, Native Americans. Well, we could kind of like back up and say, hey, we're all just kind of American. But then some people call that racist if you try to do that. They divide people into communities based on thought, religion, sexual orientation, gender. And then now, if you don't know your gender or want to be LGB, whatever, like they separate people through the worst types of isolation that is promoted a lot through government policy, politicians, and media. If you go back to the divide and conquer strategy that I mentioned on the last podcast, this was actually something that came up on Twitter the other night, in this discussion thread over there. You disable independent thinking by, let's say, educational fads, okay? You promote human isolation and dependency on government or policies. Educational fads that actually cultivate ignorance and shun knowledge. Like, we all complain about how they've dumbed down our schools and our education system. And some places say, hey, we've got a great educational system. But really, how good was it compared to 50 years ago? I would, even in some of your best school districts, I would ask parents to go back and look at that, because our kids are falling behind more and more every year in math and science. We don't learn history. Obviously, our children don't learn the value of the Constitution and what the concept of liberty is, or free thinking in public schools, because we're just turning out when they're almost like little propaganda mills for communism. And then you get to the big school, the college, pay a lot of money you can't afford, and then think everybody owes you by writing off your college expenses, right? So that should be free now. Okay. Well, that's a communist mentality. And this is bred in colleges and public schools. Another thing that was part of laying the groundwork was to get into the schools. And this has been written about in ad nauseum. Again, don't take my word for any of this. Go do your own research. You're going to find this stuff, and it's readily available to see for anybody. They go after the schools through the attack on the humanities and K through 12 and higher, and through a lack of general knowledge about how mass psychology works. They'll leave all that out. That's addressed more in Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, right? How to at that point. once you have the ideology down, how do you start to do mass psychology? Anyway, all the while, new communication technologies develop and they're embedded into the groundwork that promotes tyranny over liberty. Case in point, I don't know how many times I've heard on news media, even somebody like on CNBC, Jim Cramer, of all people, from Mad Money, turning tyrant at the end of his show to make vaccines mandatory. And I think I mentioned what was happening in Austria on the last episode, but in Austria now, they're going to lift all the mandates, the lockdowns. You can go out as long as you've had your vaccine and your booster. If you haven't had your booster, you have a certain amount of time to get it. If you haven't been vaccinated and are not planning on getting vaccinated, the lockdowns stay in effect for you. So now they're going to kill you economically. They're going to kill you socially because you're in isolation. They're going to shame you. And you're not going to be able to work. And then at some point, you're not going to be able to afford your rent, your mortgage, whatever you have. And you're being, put into a life of poverty and probably depression. Okay. And now I'm not anti-vax, and I've said this on here many times, but everybody should have a choice. For some people, it may be okay. Some people have already had COVID and have the antibodies. Well, why the hell would you need a vaccine? Your antibodies are better than the vaccine. So, some people like me, until this vaccine, and there were a specific reason I got it, not because of my health, but I've never had a flu shot in my life. And since 9/11, an event that everybody can remember, I could count on one hand the number of times I've actually been sick in 20 years. It's pretty good odds. So I've got a pretty good healthy immune system. Why play with it and F it up? So anyway, but they're pushing this with the vaccines. I mean, that's the most obvious way now about promoting tyranny over liberty, punishing people who haven't had the vaccine. Also punishing people who don't buy into your groupthink, cancel culture. That's another part of this. Through the effects of these trends, people become less open to logic. You can't debate. Like Fauci says, well, if you're arguing with me, you're arguing with science. Well, the part of science I thought was to constantly be looking for answers and debate. All right, there was no end all and be all. I took science class when I was in high school. I've had science classes before, and and all of us have, but suddenly did we forget that? Well, we do if we're being told enough that, hey, if you argue with this logic, then you're not being scientific. You argue with me, you're arguing with science. No, that again is a form of mass manipulation. People become less open to logic. They're more persuaded by the images and the emotional appeals. And that's cemented by groupthink. And then the other phase of this is they manufacture the propaganda. And propaganda's always been with us. It's always going to be with us. Unfortunately, our news media stopped being news media and turned into propaganda for the most part. Didn't matter which party you're in this country. There's both sides, okay? But as people become less able to tell fact from lie, propaganda sort of feeds, just becomes more like a snowball effect. And emotions trump facts. Seems like that's the way it is. And they drive people to agitate. It's like they're driving people to be agitated for a collectivist agenda. And it's very Orwellian. The manipulation of the language is, when you hear that, like the political correct language and the inconstant political correctness. We went from two genders to like 56 to 85. Hell, I don't know. I mean, it's just absolutely insanity. But when you hear people talking about manipulation of the language, that's always, I mean, that's a red flag to me. And journalists, they've just become increasingly propagandist. I mean, revision of history, we've all seen this. And of course, in this article, this lady wrote that I've referred to, she refers to the trends such as gender ideology, which pushes to, I guess, like de-sex everybody in the eyes of the law, as and it takes in, the form of political correctness, which was a strategy developed by the Bolsheviks, and that term was invented back then, political correctness. Okay, it basically that just threatens people with social rejection if they don't conform to a groupthink. And and when people are nervous about that, it causes self-censorship. You're less likely to say something if you think you're going to be ridiculed for it or laughed for it, even if you got to, even if you make a good point. So they're intimidating people out of free speech, which is the center point of our democracy, of our libertarian form of government, Republican form of government. And they create the illusion that public opinion is one thing, when really it's just a crazy minority that's pushing this. Anyway, another important tenet, and then I'm gonna get into these five things that Marx wanted to get rid of. I'm not gonna get too deep in the weeds here, but one of the biggest things was agitating the masses as one of those phases of from freedom to communism. I said, once all that groundwork's been laid, the propaganda's out there, enough people just listen to it and absorb it, which we have been for decades, then agitation can proliferate. Everybody kind of wondered why things went off the rails after 2010 culturally and socially. Well, Lenin made really clear that agitation and propaganda go hand in hand, and it's central to communist revolutions. And as that sort of agitation becomes more a part of our day-to-day life, then there's quick, we're faster on the road to this totalitarian type of government. And man, we are racing right toward it. Now agitation can come in, many different forms, okay? Because back then, they didn't have all the social media and the television, the radio, and the 24/7 communication, and then had the ability to cut people's speech off, okay? Agitation can involve protests, parades, marches, demonstrations. It also involves shutdowns of legislators, just a lot of different things to affect public policy or public opinion. Antifa and BLM burning the hell out of everything and beating the shit out of people in the streets for no reason. And then calling that justice for racial justice or whatever kind of justice they were looking for. Kind of insane. You hate seeing an older couple having dinner and some Antifa guy or BLM guy walking by. And why is the BLM guy always some white liberal? That's what I want to know. Where the hell are all the black people? I'm sure there are people out there, right? But I'm just saying, it's like these communists have hijacked any movement they can get their hands on. Okay. So during that phase, though, imitation or not imitation, but imitating people is a big part of what they do. Antifa and BLM have intimidated people on the streets. Like I said, older couples finally getting out during the pandemic and sitting down trying to enjoy an evening on a sidewalk at a table at a restaurant, and BLM or Antifa comes by, sits down, throws their food over, points fingers in their face, calls them names, threatens to kick their ass. I mean, what are you going to have some 80-year-old guy having a sandwich and cause him to have a heart attack? But they don't give a shit. That's what they want. They want that visual. They want to be able to have that power. And, I would love to see them sit down at a table where a couple of ex-Marines are sitting there having a burger and a beer and pull that shit. No, they don't do that. They don't go to sit down at tables and try to push around people that'll beat the living hell out of them. They go after everybody else to intimidate people en masse. That's just the strategy. Another thing was we saw among the NFL players during the national anthem. And it turned into something other than a message, which I thought was a lousy way to get the message across, taking a knee. I mean, you're just pissing people off. I mean, you're not solving a problem. You're creating an image is what you're doing. And maybe that was part of what the purpose was. I don't know. I can't be in the hearts and minds of some of these people. Maybe some of them they thought they were doing good, and I don't know. But it seems that hatred and frustration are more palpable everywhere we go in society right now. And the media and Hollywood, academia, they wouldn't have us focus on anything else. It's out there, you know. And the education establishment just becomes involved in politically agitating children. And I saw this about 15 years ago when I went to sit in for to be a judge for some students that were doing these little contests on a Saturday. And some of them were cultural, and some of them were artistic, and some were scientific, and yeah, just a little contest, you know. And I sat in on one little play that this group of kids did, and it. I swear to God, I thought, like, man, this is George Orwell coming back to haunt us. The way they viewed themselves and mankind. I mean, that whoever their teacher is that taught them that taught them absolutely nothing but self-hate, hatred for mankind. We're evil people because we've messed up the environment, and we all deserve to die. That was their entire play. And it terrified the hell out of me that day. I looked at that and was like, wow, that generation is going to try to kill us off. And then they, at some point after years of influence, they, consolidating and taking over some of society's institutions. Now, if you go back about 100 years, the communist, the Italian communist, what was his name? Anyway, he had this theory called cultural hegemony, right? And that was where said that cultural institutions were the enemy, right? Claiming they were used to maintain power. So the key to achieving communism in the West wasn't through destroying its culture necessarily, not through promoting economic policies of socialism, which people really didn't like. They said, but it would require a long march through the institutions of society. Infiltrating them and destroying them from within so communism could fill the vacuum. And that is where radicals like Saul Alinsky from the 60s picked up on that theme, noting, and they always refer to the system, or that system, and that system was American freedom, could only be destroyed from within once radical operatives had control over society's institutions. That is where some people today get that term, the deep state. So that's one example that's been building through decades of bureaucratic bloat in the government. Operatives embedding themselves throughout government institutions, cultural institutions, including the military and intelligence agencies. And of course, the cultural takeover of media, colleges, public schools, entertainment. It's all very broad and deep. You ever wonder why everybody in Hollywood is a left winger? And I don't mean just like the liberal that lives across the street from me. I mean far left winger. Like, I know liberals. And there's a big difference between like some liberals that I have as friends and these people that I'm talking about. So if you're one of those people listening, like, are you talking about me? Well, you should know I'm not. But if if you're thinking about some of these things I'm talking about, thinking, yeah, that's a good idea, then maybe you need to think about it. I'll just throw that out there. But I don't think I would hang around people that would be closet communists, but anyway, that's just part of another phase where they get to force and conformity, and then finally having communism, which fails everywhere. But let's go back to the Communist Manifesto, and then I'm gonna read a little short story or part of one. And this is from straight from the Communist Manifesto. I told you I went and picked this up on my Kindle. Karl Marx was not a good guy. But I will tell you this: if you read the Communist Manifesto, it is one of the most brutally honest things you'll ever read. He holds no punches. He's not lying about what he's thinking. He was very candid about his aims and the goals of communism. And to be so brazen, I mean, that's just baked into the way these people are. To be that brazen and bold, BLM and Antifa. Okay? Look how brazen and bold these people are that take to the streets and take over part of a city and kick the cops out of their precinct and have that Chaz, whatever it was there in Portland. And these people are brazen. And it's just baked into who the hell they are. This is a quote from Marx. The communists disdain to conceal their views and aims. They openly declare that their ends can be attained only by the forcible overthrow of all existing social conditions. Let the ruling classes tremble at a communist revolution. Wow, yeah. In a lot of regards, I look at something like this, and like you could look at Mein Kampf and from that Hitler had wrote, and you're really just presented with an undiluted view and vision of an ideology. As dark as it may be, they're not lying. They're very honest about what their aims are. And Marx's manifesto, he summed up his theory of communism with a single sentence. All right, abolition of private property. That's a quote. Don't take my word for it. Go buy this piece of shit and read it. Yeah, I got it for like $1.99. It's less than 100 pages, I think. If you get the Kindle version, it's like 60. It's not a long read, but it is dark and depressing. And which is generally the malaise they want on all of society by separating us into little boxes, divide and conquer, and then push this horseshit theory on us so that we're all miserable and destroy, sink the ship we're all floating in. So they can build everything up for totalitarian control from below. All in claiming fairness and justice and equality. So, full of shit. Anyway, abolition of private property. Do you own a car? No, you don't. Not now. Do you own a phone? Are you listening to this podcast on this phone? On your phone? Or a laptop? Nope, not anymore. That doesn't belong to you. That's private property. You got to get rid of that. That belongs to the collective. Everybody can use it. Think about that. Do you have a house? No, you don't. The furniture you sit on is not yours. That business you built, you didn't build that. That's scary. For those of you who follow politics closely, you know who said that in the last 10 years. Okay. But that was hardly the only thing that he believed had to be abolished from society, and has marched away. He called utopia. All right. Marx highlighted five things and ideas and institutions that he wanted to see eradicated. And if you go to the Black Lives Matter website, I think I did hear someone say this on television. I've not been there to confirm it because I'm not going to visit their website, nor would I visit any Antifa website or any other radical website. But on there, they wanted to abolish the family. Now, what is the first thing that Marx wants to abolish? By the way, the people who lead BLM are admitted communists. The first thing Marx wanted to eliminate was the family. He admitted that destroying the family is a thorny topic, even for revolutionaries, but it was absolutely essential. And this is a quote. I love quoting what these people say. Abolition of the family. Even the most radical flare-up of this infamous proposal of the communist, he writes. Even the most radical will flare up at this infamous proposal. But he said opponents of this idea fail to understand the key fact about the family. And I go on to quote, on what foundation is the present family, the bourgeois family, based? On capital, on private gain. In its completely developed form, this family exists only among the bourgeois, on the bourgeoisie, he writes. Best of all, abolishing the family would be relatively easy once property was abolished. The family will vanish as a matter of course when its complement vanishes, and both will vanish with the vanishing of capital. Now, yeah, I'm not going to get into that. That might be a little controversial, but there are already segments of our population where families have been destroyed. The family unit has been attacked for decades. And we see the results. The results are in. Number two is individuality. He wanted to destroy your individuality. The very thing that creative people and artists propose and stand for. And this is for a lot of my liberal friends. It doesn't matter whether you want to have the pink hair, the gray, you know, what you want to do with your hair, what kind of piercings, tattoos, music, writing, painting. Individuality had to be abolished. To these people, the arts were a waste of time. And in many communist areas of the world, well, let's take Castro, for example, in Cuba. He hated artists so badly, he thought they were so westernized because of their individuality, that he sent Che Guevara, you know, that guy that's on everybody's t-shirts that says Che, like he's some great revolutionary. He sent them around to kill anybody who listened to jazz because he thought, one, he was racist and didn't like black people. He thought anybody that promoted or did any kind of arts were worthless and useless to society, and he sent Che Guevara to kill them. So when he went out is pillaging and kicking ass from one community to another, artists got special attention. Yeah, let that sink in. Next time you see a rapper or you know, an actor or somebody wearing a Che Guevara shirt, yeah, that guy was a mass murderer. Yeah, he was a racist, and he hated you for your art. Okay. So Marx believed that individuality was antithetical to what he envisioned. Therefore, the individual, and this is what he says, quote, must be swept out of the way and made impossible. Individuality was a social construction of a capitalist society. It was deeply intertwined with capital itself. In society, capital is independent and has individuality, while the living person is dependent and has no individuality, he wrote. And the abolition of this state of things is called by the Burgess abolition of individuality and freedom. And rightly so. The abolition of this individuality, of independence, and freedom is undoubtedly aimed at. That's his quote. So no individuality, no personal property, and no family. Okay. So what else did he want to abolish? He claimed he wanted to abolish eternal truths. Marx did not appear to believe that any truth existed beyond class struggle. So the ruling ideas of each age have ever been the ideas of its ruling class, he says. When the ancient world was in its last throes, the ancient religions were overcome by Christianity. When Christian ideas succumbed in the 18th century to rationalist ideas, feudal society fought its death battle with then-revolutionary Burgess. He recognized how radical this idea would sound to his readers, particularly since communism does not seek to modify truth, but to overthrow it. But he argued, these people were missing the larger truth. Here's a quote. Undoubtedly, it will be said, religious, moral, philosophical, and judicial ideas have been modified in the course of historical development. But religion, morality, philosophy, political science, and law constantly survive this change. There are, besides eternal truths such as freedom, justice, etc., that are common to all states of society. But communism abolishes eternal truths. It abolishes all religions and all morality instead of constituting them on a new basis. It therefore acts in contradiction to all past historical experience. What does this accusation reduce itself to? The history of all past society has consisted in the development of class antagonisms, antagonisms that assume different forms at different epochs. Wow, okay. Not a nice guy, folks. The fourth thing, and I'll just brush through these quickly, and actually I'll do the short story on a later one because we're pushing a long limit here. He said largely because of capitalism, he saw hostilities between people of different backgrounds receding. Right? So as the proletariat grew in power, there soon would be no need for nations, he wrote. So he wanted to get rid of nations. All right? Communists, Marx said, are reproached for seeking to abolish countries. These people fail to understand the nature of the proletariat, he wrote. The working men have no country. We cannot take from them what they have not got. Since the proletariat must first of all acquire political supremacy, must rise to the leading class of the nation, must constitute itself a nation, it is so far itself national, though not in the Burgess sense of the word. Yeah. He also wanted to get rid of the past. Marx, and this, literally the past, that's number five. Marx saw tradition as a tool of the burgess. Adherence to the past served as a mere distraction in proletariat's quest for emancipation and supremacy. He wrote, "In society, the past dominates the present. In communist society, the present dominates the past." So there it is, folks. He wants to get rid of the past. It's communism and these groups. And you can see their tactics out in play even in America and globally right now. They want to get rid of the past. They want to get rid of every nation. So no longer you don't have a country. They want to get rid of eternal truths, and that's their words, not mine. Individuality and the family. And they're very bold and brazen by laying that out and claiming that. So, when you watch the news next time, I hope you think of what they're saying, the propaganda, and all the shit you read on the internet in these terms. And when you hear these passionate pleas and arguments from people on that side of the, like, so far left, they may be laying down. I'm not talking about your everyday liberal pal, all right? So let's stop the divide and conquer, and let's actually just point out the tactics. Because if you can spot the tactics, you can spot the bullshit. And let's not give these people power. I kind of like my freedom, and I'm sure you like your family. I'm sure you like owning your house and your dog and your phone. I'm sure you like your individuality and your creativity without being stifled. And wherever you're at, I would hope you would like your nation. We all have flaws. All nations are flawed. All histories are flawed. All societies are flawed. That's okay. But when you see people separating each person's flaws to divide and conquer everybody against each other, well, we know something bad's at play. And we've seen this story before. We've seen this in play in history. Just not so subtle, not dragging out so long, like Bolshevik Revolution probably didn't take us nearly the time it took for people to infiltrate institutions in America or Australia when you see what's happening there now. We've seen things like this take place in Germany to a different extent. Anyway, little history lesson. Go read your Communist Manifesto. You'll see what's you'll see the world through a little through different eyes, I guess. But anyway, I'll get off these topics. I'll do another podcast and we'll go into Tales from the Sunset Pub. We're going to talk about fire dancers, midgets, and Vegas, baby. We're going to keep it. We're going to go back to the weird. But anyway, I promised I would do those topics, and there they are. Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in to the Gonzo Chronicles. I greatly appreciate it. If you thought these last two podcasts were sort of helpful, if you're kind of in that political realm or philosophical realm and you want to share it with people, please do so. You can find the link on at gonzochronicles.podbean.com, or you can find me on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Google Play, wherever like you listen to your podcast. It's a little bit of everywhere. So share these last couple of episodes with folks, and I hope you like them. Hey, thanks everybody. Tune in next time. If you don't listen before the end of the year, and I hope you do, because I'll be back with three or four more episodes at least. Hope you have a great Christmas and a happy, happy new year. See you on down the road, folks.